Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippen. We get lots of pictures, photographs, and videos of UFOs submitted to us all the time here at the UFO Files. However, we thought it would be interesting to talk to a fellow who can tell, actually, he can promise you that you can get a picture of a UFO in almost no time. Evidently, he has a plan, Stan. Well, his name's not Stan, it's John Breaux, actually John Wilkie, and you may remember him from Star Trek, but he's no longer in Hollywood. He's up on a lake in Michigan. A nice area there. I take it you're right on the lakefront, John, is that right?
I live on a lake outside of Anna.
Well, it sounds like you really have a nice place there, John. A nice view of a lake, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm right on the lakefront and a place called Strawberry Lake, Amber, Michigan.
How long have you been away from Hollywood?
Well, I came back here about 2 years ago. I've also have some local press on my website there. They explained it really well.
Yeah, we don't. They can go look at it and understand all of it. But I wanted to talk a little bit about your Hollywood career. You appeared in the Star Trek TV show, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, which one of them? The series.
I did the Voyager series. The first thing on there was they had a 2 hour special. I do that about once a year in that series, and I was this really kind of fearsome lizard type, lizard man called a Hirogen, the hunter. I basically took control of the Voyager and made it into a big war simulation. And it really was a culmination of a lifelong dream for me to actually have my little part of the Star Trek legacy,
Let's talk a little bit about your website here. You've got some pretty interesting things up there. Call yourself John Bro?
That's a nickname, sir. Originated from, I don't know if you ever heard of Dr. Demento.
Sure.
And by chance, I had submitted a number of musical recordings. I'm also a musician. The bassist from the band Spirit from the 60s. There's a rock and roll band, Nature's Way. I Got a Line on You, Babe. Anyways, they're a famous band in the 60s. And of all the serious music that I submitted, they kind of focused on the off-the-wall comedy hits. And one of the pieces, I was a fictional character called John Bro. And if I tell people my name, John Wilkie, they can't remember that, but they automatically remember John Bro.
So you kind of just locked in on that, huh?
Well, it stuck to me,
Yeah. Well, we understand that. Let's talk a little bit about one of the things that caught my attention immediately on your website was how to videotape UFOs.
Well, yes, sir.
Yeah, what tell me a little bit about A, how you do it, and B, how you got interested in that part.
Well, sir, I've actually published this and had it out for over a decade now. I'm probably one of the most famous unknown people that you'll ever meet. And I've gone through the circuit, sir. I've done the sighting show, Strange Universe. I've even been on 48 Hours and 60 Minutes and, if I can say it ourselves, that the origin of it for me was that in 1994 I was in the Valley of Los Angeles and we had the great Northridge quake. And believe me, that the thing was bigger than the world knew. If you weren't there, you don't understand.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
So after the fact, I was working in between, shows in Hollywood. If you're not a big star, that's code word for you have to take a lot of little jobs in between your parts. So I was working with a friend of mine that was retrofitting foundations for damage as a result of that earthquake. And one day, I think it was in October of 94, we were in the west end of the San Fernando Valley, the West Hills area, Depot, of all things. And he had gone inside to purchase materials. I was outside at the street vendor to purchase a small meal, sitting down at a picnic table, and around 11 o'clock in the morning, I had noticed coming up from the west side of the valley in broad daylight a shooting star. And I just thought this was fabulous. I had never seen one, you know. And it went from one side of the valley to the other in a matter of seconds. We're talking probably a 10 to 15 mile jump. And I watched this thing streak across, and then it slowed down. It started coming down to Earth like in a corkscrew motion.
Yeah, which is not a falling star behavior.
Yeah, and it went down right about in the same area as where I live. Now, it just went down over by Mount Wilson and, you know, Dodger Stadium area. So my boss comes out, and I'm trying to tell him about this, and he doesn't want to hear anything about UFOs, so he just cut this thing short, right? So I'd already had an interest in that. So, make a long story short, we're heading east on the Ventura Freeway, come up to the area of Mount Wilson, and I see this ball, looks like a daylight star, going a large loop-de-loop over this mountain. And we're in the traffic jam. There must be 400,000 people literally going east and watching this thing, and the loop must have covered a mile or two, and just going around and around. And I'm feeling like if anybody looked, they would have seen this. And I tried to tell the driver, who was my employer, to look up, and he wouldn't even look. He didn't want to have this time wasted. At the end of the day, we had made one more stop for an assessment to make a bid on the job, and we were in Van Nuys, and there's kindly little old lady, you know, literally the grandma type in a canvas tent shoes, walked out to me before she even introduced herself to me. She looked at me and she said, "Do you believe in UFOs?" I mean, this had just happened a couple hours after I'd seen this event, right? And I reluctantly said yes. She pulled me aside and she says, "Well, I want you to come over here tonight. I've got a video to show you." So I went there that evening, and she turned on this video, and it's exactly the same thing that I had seen that afternoon.
And when had she shot that video?
Well, one of her neighbors had shot it, I think it was January, like a week or two before the earthquake, which was in the northwest end of the valley, Northridge. And I lived in Reseda, which is just adjacent south of there. Anyway, so I got to be friends with her, and she just came out and she said, "John, I'm trying to buy a video camera. I want you to help me videotape UFOs." And, you know, tongue-in-cheek, I just said, "Well, okay." But after this, I took a look into the garage area, and I found that almost every time that I was looking up, I was seeing one of these, what I called them at the time was daylight stars. Some people refer to them as orbs. And then I watched them for a period of time, and a couple of them would come together and interact. It would, like, push me, pull you. It looked like they were repelling off of one another, almost like slingshotting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm ex-Air Force. I worked on the F-15s out of Eglin, which is ironically right outside from Gulf Breeze, Florida.
Yes.
I have actually, to interject, I have also been to the Area 51 facility at least 100 times that they're through there.
Well, you have been in there.
Yeah, it's off the wall. The story before anybody has heard of Area 51, I was enlisted as a mechanic on the engines on the F-15 Strike Eagle. And we went out to Nellis Air Force Base for the Red Flag exercise. And it just so happened that our lodging was at some old barracks. It required about an hour drive in an old bus way out in a place what they call Groom Lake. At the time, nobody, this story had not broken.
About what time frame was this?
This would have been late, probably September 1981.
Okay.
George Knapp has yet to, like, bring that to the public attention.
I did not become aware of the place until about 89 or 88.
Yeah, I think it was somewhere around 84 or 85. But we would also take some civilians with us on this bus and drop them off at a little terminal at McLaren. You know, there.
Yeah, the executive side.
And I have seen those little 727s with no numbers on the tail. And the guy, you know, he just told me he works out there and they commute. And they, I had a top secret clearance on a need-to-know basis. So, I mean, he didn't mind telling me that, you know, he worked on government stuff and it was, you know, it was classified. So we drop them off there and we drive way out into the middle of the desert there in an old dry lake called Grim Lake. They got it set it up, I think it's like in a grid. It was Area 49, Area 50, 51 and 52, top to bottom, left to right, you know what I mean? And so we were in like Area 49, Area 50 in an old barracks. Now the strangest thing that I saw while I was out there was an old C-130 testing like a laser. And then, but I did have like quote-unquote dream memories of, you know, we'd be on this bus going home after work. It was a long ride and invariably we'd all kind of fall asleep. And I had, it took me, I don't know, 6-7 years to have a dream, quote unquote, of this bus going over the side of the road, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And a couple people were let off and let on every night. Now, like I say, my memory is just like...
Can you remember those people? Were they normal? Were they workers or...?
Just, you know, military...
Did they have military uniforms?
Well, I don't remember it clearly. They had military uniforms. I think it was enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I say dream because I can't substantiate it, all right? But this is what I remember. And it did take years for this to come back to me. They walked several people off the bus. Everybody else would stay asleep. Walked you off into the desert. In my dream, the floor... The desert floor just kind of opened up and you walked down a ramp. And when you went inside there, you had basically medical examination. And then they'd walk you back on the bus, you'd drive off, and nobody'd remember it. Because I do know that the first, you know, in the folklore of the genre, I'm very careful to state that I am an amateur expert of the folklore of this UFO genre. But in the folklore of the genre, the first people that they would do experiments on and stuff were the enlisted personnel of the military. That is the alleged, unsubstantiated legend, rumor of it.
Now, you personally, as far as recall, you can't recall ever seeing anything that resembled an extraterrestrial yourself, or can you?
Well, within my dream, as I cannot substantiate it, it's just, I remember it as a dream. When you walked into this room, there'd be some civilian, some military, like doctors, and then there'd be some odd-looking characters standing in the rear. It just looks like a regular medical facility. Now, like I say, we were there probably for a month and a half. And so, I mean, I say 100 times, it might literally have been 50 times that I trekked into that area. And my memory of my dream is that everybody got their chance, you know, to go off that bus and load it back on. It's an interesting story if you can't substantiate it, but this was before anybody had ever heard of that area.
Now, had you seen lights in the sky beforehand, or did you start seeing these things later?
Well, I have memories from childhood, and several things. I mean, right before I went into the service, I had a couple of pretty serious sightings. I'm currently in the area where Dr. Hynek first coined the phrase swamp gas when he was working for Project Blue Book. And I found it quite interesting after the fact later on that he basically jumped sides to the UFO enthusiasts or proponents.
Let me talk to you about our website for a minute. We're on the World Wide Web, of course, at jerrypippin.com. That's P-I-P-P-I-N, Jerry Pippin is all one word, naturally. We bill our website as Adventures in Internet Broadcasting. And we have lots of video, hundreds of hours of audio programs. And they're not all just UFO and paranormal programs, even though we do have complete conference coverage of all the major UFO conferences, talking to all the movers and shakers in the UFO research business, plus many people who've had experiences with UFOs, either sighting them or worse. And in addition to that, we have a memory section, so you can jump back into the time machine and go back and enjoy memories from good old oldies music. And in addition to that, we have a conspiracy files. Oh, we have all kinds of things. Entertainment, that's what we stress at jerrypippin.com. So check us out, jerrypippin.com, jerrypippin.com. And when you saw, you talked to this lady, you helped her find a video camera and coached her on how to do this, and you were seeing lights yourself.
Well, actually, my things were, it was all daylight. Mm-hmm. I didn't see much at night. You know, I saw a couple things at night out here. I've literally got journals and books on it. I have them available, but I've never sold anything on this. Just have it available in the future if it comes to fruition. People are interested. There's a record of it. But I had seen so many things so often over Los Angeles in the mid-90s that I would tell people and take them out with me, and they would have their first sighting. So my first thought was it's something coming out of Vandenberg or Palmdale Skunk Works area. But I'm thinking, if I see it so often, you have to go out and spend an hour or two before you saw something, that there must be a way to hasten the process. So I ferociously, I read everything I could get my hands on. I watched every show that came on, every magazine. And I kept reading these references to people seeing UFOs. Military, extraterrestrial, otherwise, who knows, it's all speculation. And as soon as they were focusing on it, they'd lose it in the sunlight, kind of like a baseball player loses the baseball coming down. They lost it in the sun, you know, the old cliche thing. And then I started. I had read this article by William Hamilton, Bill Hamilton.
Yeah, no, Bill Will.
And it was called Sky Dance. And it was in a magazine lent to me by Christian Bennett of, I think it's Thousand Oaks, MUFON or something. But he had written up one of my experiences in an article under a pseudonym. You know, I was John Burrow in the pseudonym. And he had talked about this sky dancer and up in Palmdale area that there was a sheriff that they just called Archie. Every day around noontime, watch one of these things come up from the mountain, and made reference that he lost it in the sun again. There's that sun thing again. On my, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, let's go. This is strength to begin with, so let's go there, okay? What if these objects were so advanced they knew somehow that they had been seen and were intentionally jumping in a straight line between the observer and the sun? Because even a radar, you know, pointed at the sun is going to get such radiation that they couldn't really pick out an object. In World War II, it was a technique, a tactic of the Japanese to line up with the sun behind their back and come down on their target. And, you know, coming out of the sun was an old war technique because you didn't see him until it was too late. And then I did more research, and then there in 1991, the event that made hunting the sun really come to UFO notoriety was the solar eclipse in Mexico City. And when the sun was covered by the moon completely, people started seeing objects in the sky. So anyways, to go back, if this sheriff in Palmdale was losing this object in a straight line to the sun, if I'm down in the San Fernando Valley, my angle of vision would be different. So it wouldn't be in a straight line, it might be on the side. How can I look up into the vicinity of the sun without looking directly at it, see next to it? So I decided, well, I'll come up with a way to make an artificial eclipse. And the best way that I could figure out how to do that was to, I was on the second story of my apartment building, wrapped my leg around the wrought iron, you know, railing there, and leaned back, caught, I had the overhang of the apartment right at the edge of the disc of the sun, but I could still see the glow, which I called the corona. And then immediately, the first day I saw it, I saw these little white balls trickling out on a straight line, almost like they were on a string. And my first reaction is that I must be seeing some kind of glint off a tree, something high in the atmosphere, insect. Excuse me. But I continued to look, and the second day I saw two would come down in a row. And then three in a triangle, four in a box. I mean, now I'm seeing geometry. And when it's repeated, then it seems to me it's not natural. There's something to it. So I shook the tree and went through the grapevine and asked, you know, MUFON and all these other people if they would try it, if they could see it. And their first responses were no, but I went out and didn't see it, so I had to go back to this elderly woman, Martha Reimer, Van Nuys. She now has a video camera. I asked her, let me file your video camera and get this thing on film, on tape, right? I think it was the end of June that I had drawn up the original diagram of, I called it the technique for videotaping the UFOs.
Now, you have all this on your website, right?
Oh, I've got the articles, I've got short movies from episodes of the sightings, you know, photographs of people from around the world that have tried this since the beginning, every year sequential. I've got a novel online if you go to johnbro.com. The Hollywood stuff is in there, UFO stuff is in there.
Yeah, we want to, you know, we couldn't possibly cover it all, so we want to push the fact that they can go take their time and look at it all, because it's pretty incredible.
I've now had, I think by 1998, with no budget, without selling anything, I had forwarded this information to television, radio, internet, magazines, to over half a billion people. In other countries, Korea, for instance, has made a very large deal out of this, and they're having success. So my point is, there are thousands of people out there that have tried this and gotten some results.
Have you, this worked well in the West, in California, and the desert, in Nevada. How about up in Ann Arbor?
You know, I just put a camera out for the first time. The irony of this, Jerry, is I've never owned a video camera. I always ask other people to borrow theirs because it's a little more credible to them if it shows up on their machine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I want to go back for a second. On July the 14th, 1995, I had filed this camera for this lady for about the third time. Put the camera up and an insect or something flew through there really quick. So I took that tape and I reviewed it that evening. And when this bug came through here, I wanted to see, well, what would the bug look like compared to, you know, one of these white balls? So we had it go through the frame and then we rewound it to the point just before the image, then frame by frame, stepping it to, you know, the middle of the field for the video. And lo and behold, this thing was a stereotypical, almost like out of Bugs Bunny cartoon, saucer with a dome on. And I mean, I could not believe it. If I had not shot this myself, I would have doubted. Now, as this thing passed through, as soon as it passed, it created a glitch on the video camera. And I later on asked what this was. The video camera took an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, shut the camera off for a millisecond, and turned it back on. So there was a black line that followed down behind it, as added, you know, evidence that there was some energy following it. And I took this image, sent it out, and had it analyzed. Right away, they told me, and it's on the website, they call it the Receipt of Saucer. It's my first really tangible evidence. That they told me it was approximately 3 miles away, and their estimation, it was going 17,000 miles an hour.
That's pretty fast.
So I submitted this to Jim Beckley out of New Jersey and Unsolved UFO Sightings magazine. They published the whole story. It came out in December 1995. And the sightings crew showed up at my house. Sightings, the television show.
Yes, uh-huh.
And when they showed up, they were just about laughing at me. The interview came off well. They decided to put their camera up. And as we were doing it, they got a couple things on there, too. When they left, they weren't laughing anymore. They were shaking, and they were shaking my hand, thanking me. I have to say, it took the sighting so a year and a half to put that on television. And when they finally aired it, number one, they misquoted me. Number two, they did not show the evidence that I had given to them. What they showed was very... friends. It was very debunkable. It didn't look like anything.
Why do you think that they did that?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I'm not sure why it took them a year and a half to air it. But they had forwarded the information to Bruce McAbee. He wouldn't even look at it. So they forwarded it then to Jim Dillis Coastal Village Lab in Phoenix, Arizona. And he was very excited about this, and had some other people across the country that, I guess a few months after I was doing it, some other people caught on, were trying it too. I don't know if you remember Tim Edwards of Goleta, Colorado. He got the main craft footage in August of 95. I found it quite interesting, Gary, that this fella took a videotape and 3 days later he was on TV. I had come up with a repeatable exercise that anybody could do. It took over a year for anybody to respond. I later found out that they're actually UFO agents, like a Hollywood agent, that have connections and can push this stuff through. And
So what you're saying is there's certain people in Hollywood that'll call up a documentary unit, somebody that's producing something like sightings or whatever, and they can get their client, their product on.
Well, they can get it out the next day.
Yeah.
Contact at the local news.
And meanwhile, other people, it takes them years.
Well, I had a beautiful, clear picture of a flying saucer over L.A., contacted the news organizations, and I didn't get a single response. Now, in 1997, I think it was in April, the sightings program, basically they showed people what I was doing and how I was doing it. They did a pretty good coverage, but like I said, they did misquote me. When I interviewed, they asked me what I thought it was, and I said, my response was, and I have it on tape, that I believe that sometimes we were catching pieces of hardware. When the sightings episode aired, their comment was that Jombro emphatically states that these are extraterrestrial vehicles that are coming down. Well, I'm little bit more intelligent to make a blanket statement like that, there. But after this show had aired probably 30 times across the world by April, there's a young fellow named Jeff Wills out in Phoenix here.
Yeah, I know Jeff.
And I think it was like the next day or a couple of days after that, he was on the news in Phoenix. The news people said he wasn't even looking for UFOs and he caught this by accident. Then they showed the reel that Jeff had gotten. And it was very obvious he was using the overhang right to the edge of the sun, and you could see him dusting up his lens and caught an exact replica of something I had gotten about a year before in Los Angeles. And within 2 or 3 days, this fellow's on television with it on the local Phoenix News. But I think he also had a connection that in March of that year, he had got one of the segments of the Phoenix Lights. So they already knew him.
We're all familiar with the famous Bose name when it comes to great sound. And now, Bose has made it possible to enjoy your iPod music and programs in the fullest possible fidelity. Just slip in the iPod into the docking cradle, and instantly you will have the famous Bose sound system playing your downloaded digital audio. By the way, the iPod charges as it plays on the Bose machines, so you always have the programming without interruption. Bose gives your programs from the internet vitality and realism, a full, rich sound. The Bose sound dock requires no adapters or wires. All you do is use one of the specifically designed iPod models. We have a banner on this page where you can click and go over and read about the Bose sound dock machine and the iPod. In fact, you can order it right here, right now, or in the future at your convenience. Bose and iPod, a marriage made in audio heaven. Yeah, we've had him on in connection with the Phoenix Lights.
Now, also, Jim Delatoso was also the guy that analyzed his pictures. And Jim Delatoso was prominently featured in my segment on Titan. And I know he must have told Jeff, well, look at the John Brooks stuff, that he's doing the same exact thing. Or my feeling was maybe Jeff saw the show and tried it. Somewhere along the line was advised not to mention it. The thing is, I haven't been trying to sell anything, Jerry. I give this away for free because I believe that anybody can go out there and do this. And I haven't had contact. I email Jim Delatoso and he won't respond. Now, I think there's a guy named Michael Panner who works with Jim, and I talked to him, and he says, well, just forward your correspondence to me. And he says, what the idea, what they wanted me to do is basically sell the pictures and the videos and not people how, tell people how I've done it.
And your feeling is?
Sooner or later, I get caught in that deception, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a breakthrough where somebody like me isn't considered such an oddball. But what I ran into, well, I have mentioned the agent theory, is I have found that, you know, the UFO is an industry, it's a business. And I've heard quotes as high as $1 billion, I think it's probably high. Let's just say multi-$1 million per annum is turned out of selling videos and documentaries and shows. So there is a certain competition in here for the big fish, for people figuring out whether it fits into their agenda or not to promote. They pick and choose who gets out there. I never expected this. I used to think, you take a good picture of UFO, man, or if you had a repeatable experiment that was successful. Here I'm thinking, man, I'm going to have the world at my door. The Pulitzer Prize, the whole thing. And there was just a very little response. So I decided I was just going to give this to the world. Now, right now, there's a couple of videos out there of people that were doing it and selling the videos. kind of disappointing to me. Going off the track, but I mean, UFOs is a big business, and I think folks should be careful to, you know, avoid having to, this warehouse mentality that if you want the information, you have to go through this individual or that publisher. Jerry, I just want a breakthrough for the whole world.
Well, maybe we'll get some people in touch with you. You never know. What after all these years, what's your opinion of what's really happening there?
You mean with what's in the...
We're right. What you're actually taking pictures of.
Well, sir, I've gotten photos of everything from hardware, flying saucers. I've got some shots of the Aurora-class type jets. If folks go to my website, this is all there, you know, and I'm not being subversive. I'm a conscientious objector. Going way off the track, I've already spoken to representatives of higher authority and really cleared it up with them. I'm not out to cause any disruption. I'm a patriot, you know, I want to make that very clear. But,
Well, are you saying some of these things you've taken photos of actually are black projects?
I think there's some of ours sometimes.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, I have a feeling. Recently NASA came out with the information admitting to or announcing the hypercraft, the aircraft designs that will go exponential to the speed of sound. When in actuality, I believe the technology is probably, you know, decades old, and we're just now allowed being able to. But over the San Fernando Valley, multiple times I witnessed a hyper initiation via magneto hydrodynamic drive initiation. Basically, you ever heard of the contrails with the donuts on a rope?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll just stop. Nobody can see anything in front of them. They just see a contrail with donuts on a rope. Well, I've witnessed these contrails with donuts on a rope just stop. Then this white ball pops out of the end of it. And then there's this flashlight and a streak of orange, like a stripe, just went from horizon to horizon almost instantaneously. And then it quickly dissolves. So basically they go into an air spike, and then they initiate this MHD, you know, the Piper Jump Drive. And this is like 10 years ago, and this is old stuff, been around for a long time. I can only imagine what we have now. But I mean, we're like Star Wars, when they hit it in a hyperdrive and they just take off out of nowhere. Sometimes I believe, and this was the problem, and I didn't mean to, but I think sometimes we were photographing some of our own. Intermixed with this, and I had no intention, but I'm getting testy, what people refer to as rods, all over my video tape. Jose Escamilla?
Yeah, we've had, things about the Roswell rod and the rod up in New Hampshire somebody took a picture of.
And you have to remember, Jerry, I've had a decade plus to go through this. I've met or had association with all the big UFO guys. And the problem is they would tell me, well, John, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we'll have your back, and then I don't hear from them again. At some point, I got upset enough that I just said, hey, you guys, you know, the emperor wears no clothes. And then I become, they don't contact me anymore. I'm a loose cannon, even from this job. Well, I just wanted to, like, put this information out. If you go and if you look at Whitley Strieber's book, Confirmation, he put it out in the late 90s, and the foreword, I'm in there, and he actually covers me in his book. All these folks are keenly aware of me, and, well, I'm going back to Jose Escamilla here. It just so happens that solar obliteration, more commonly called the Jombro technique, turned out to be one of the most reliable, best ways to videotape brought up. And for some reason, with a little bit of trick and stuff we were doing in L.A., you got some of these things to come right down to the point where they would fill up the entire screen. And it is on my website. And so Jose got to the point where him and I were almost at end with one another. Like I was a competition, or sometimes I would say, I don't believe all of it, what I'm looking at is wrong. I think sometimes it's hard with.
Well, now, what are we talking about, in essence, John? What are you taking pictures of? What about these objects? Are they real?
Oh, they're absolutely real.
Are they extraterrestrial? Interdimensional? What are they?
I think sometimes, I'm only speculating, I've gotten some, well, people have to go to the website again, but I've got some really unbelievable futuristic, looks like airframes. I have a background in aircraft, and I've actually taken some of these objects and rendered them, blown them off, reinforced the lines on Corel or, Adobe, shrunk them back down. It's on my website, too. It's called Artist Rendition. Some of these objects are aerodynamic, and they look glass. And they look like one of the best designs that could be incorporated for a hyper-dynamic, a high-speed, configuration. You can't say with the typical fuselage with fixed wings to achieve, and sustain that kind of flight. So I think we have a mixture here, sometimes it is the rod phenomenon. And I don't know, I wasn't keen on that, whether these are like hyperdimensional animals that are undulating like this through the water. But I've actually seen them with my own eyes. I've recorded them. And just a couple weeks ago here in 25 degree weather, I borrowed a camera, put it up, and I've got an awful lot of these quote-unquote bugs flying through. Now, to the best of my knowledge, it's not a massive insect in a freezing environment in the winter.
Yeah, you got a good point there. So basically, you're saying that somebody could come to you with their video camera, and more than likely, the odds would be, 90% or more that you'd be able to get some pictures fairly quickly.
Oh, yes, sir. And I found that there's a tendency to get more volume over a populated area. I don't know if it's more attractive to a population center. I'm out in the country. I've gotten a couple things on here that I cannot explain. But in Los Angeles, that was the hottest area I'd ever seen. I mean, every time for 5 years, we put a camera up, we got things that we weren't expecting. Again, the folks go to the website, they can review. I've got everything from the journal to the photo documentary. I'm saying people don't have to come to me. If they learn the protocol and do it themselves, they can prove it to themselves. And I'm not selling it here, I'm giving it away.
Well, the price is right.
Well, and that's probably part of the reason why I haven't become a lot more well-known. What is considered a scientifically viable discovery? It's something that can be tested and repeated successfully. And I have given.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, our time's almost up, but I want to get back to your current plans and your website and what's going to be happening with you next. But, you mentioned being out in what later was Area 51, Groom Lake, all of that back in early 80s.
1981.
Uh-huh. What was going on there then, do you think? I mean, you were in construction there or what?
In 1981, I was in the Air Force at the Red Flag exercise.
So you were there working on jet engines?
Yes, sir. I was maintaining the F-15 engines for the 59th Tactical Fighter Wing out of the 33rd out of Edwin Air Force Base in Florida.
I mean, this place is out in the middle of nowhere, but according to what you say and what other people say, it was a fairly busy place.
Well, I've seen that facility, sir, just like the pictures on the internet. It's definitely there. I mean, the best known secret in the world. I believe by now they've probably moved it.
Yeah, but back in those days, how many people do you think worked there? Do you have any idea?
At that size, it'd probably have to take us up a couple, I'd say a thousand or two. I mean, there was a...
And most people, and I guess everybody commuted one way or another. They may have stayed there for a few days, but they always went back with the...
Terminal of McLaren Airport set up just to commute those folks into the area. I mean, it's well documented by now, so I'm not, you know...
Sure.
Scary information. I met those people, and I've seen the facility.
You basically went out there on a bus, though?
Yeah, they put us in some old barracks way out in Illinois, which seemed suspicious to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they gave us the, they justified it. Then I went back, of all places, to Gulf Breeze, Florida, where Ed Walters, I think, put all that stuff. And there's pictures of F-15s with flying saucers next to it. Now, remember, when I was there, it was before these stories broke. It's a little bit ironic. I don't know if there's any connection, but I think I will.
Yeah, I understand.
If folks wanted the long version, the long story, like I said, they can go to the John Doe Technique section of my website and see 10 years worth of documentation photographs. If they're interested in the Star Trek and the Hollywood stuff, it's also in there.
Now, in real life, you've never had a contact with an extraterrestrial, or have you?
You know, I really don't publicly speak about that.
Okay.
I will say that my private experiences prompt me to follow through on this. You know, I'm already into it so far with this method. I don't want to get too French. Well, I guess I'm already there, Jerry. Have I had contact or experience to the best of my knowledge? Yes, I've had a few sort of, you know, as I looked into the abyss, this looked back at me. But what does this mean, Jerry? If we're taking photographs of UFOs, what does it mean? So here's the best UFO photographer in the world. How does this apply to us? And I say we can take some of these photographs, look at their design, and use the design. We can turn it into commercially viable. For instance, I'm taking one of them, I'm going to make it into a RV, like a watercraft, like a wave runner. Yeah, I'm going to make lemonade out of lemons. People don't believe me anyway, so I'm making it some really cool, futuristic watercraft, you know?
Well, you may have something there.
I just think it means something beyond everybody just saying, oh my God, UFOs are real. What's the next step? You know, we need to take this to the next level. Let's utilize some of it. Let's learn from the propulsion system. Learn from the airframe design, and
well, I mean, you know, you mentioned Area 51 and the secret facility and going there and all of that.
Quarter of a century ago.
Yeah, there had to be, you know, lots of stories about the J-Rod, for instance, and whether or not there were entities from other places. Also, there's the story of the Tall Whites and on and on.
And is that it was, you know, the half man, half lizard guy?
Yeah.
Little gray dudes, I have no doubt in my mind they're real. But if we really went over this, it would take 5 hours. I'm trying to cram it all in. Sorry about that.
Sure, I understand. And our time is up. But I tell you what, I would urge people to go to your website and take a look. In fact, they could spend more than 5 hours there, couldn't they?
Well, they probably could, sir. And I'll tell you, anybody came out here or had me go to L.A. or something, I could prove the existence of something strange in our skies. And I also have a method to prove the existence of these orbs that people see in photographs. And but I'll just give it to you for free. The information is there. I like people to write me back and tell me their findings.
Well, let's say a Hollywood producer is listening and they wanted to get some good surefire pictures. Maybe it would do well for them to get in touch with you. Maybe you could, get some good shots for them. Who knows? Are you open to that? Are you open to working with Hollywood again?
I'm just taking a bit of a rest that I came home for a family illness.
Yeah, I understand that. And you're there for personal reasons.
But, I will return to it. I had all but walked away from this stuff, Gary, but I went on the internet and I keep finding people telling me that they tried the technique, they got positive results, and it just changed their lives. So I got pulled back into it because it continues even without me. So I'm coming back in, and I hope someday after the fact I could sell my journal, you know, to people who want to know how it all started. Other than that, I just, it's all free. Just to make people aware that they're not crazy.
Okay, thank you very much, John Bro. We appreciate it.
So excited. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Let me talk to you about our website for a minute. We're on the World Wide Web, of course, at jerrypippin.com. That's P-I-P-P-I-N, Jerry Pippin is all one word, naturally. We bill our website as Adventures in Internet Broadcasting. And we have lots of video, hundreds of hours of audio programs. And they're not all just UFO and paranormal programs, even though we do have complete conference coverage of all the major UFO conferences, talking to all the movers and shakers in the UFO research business. Plus many people who've had experiences with UFOs, either sighting them or worse. And in addition to that, we have a memory section. So you can jump back into the time machine and go back and enjoy memories from good old oldies music. And in addition to that, we have a conspiracy files. Oh, we have all kinds of things. Entertainment, that's what we stress. At jerrypippin.com. So check us out. JerryPippin.com. P as in Paul. jerrypippin.com.